That's for my crazy day. My packed commute. All those unread emails in my inbox. But I'm getting stronger, faster, and pushing myself further every day. I don't care if I'm not like everyone else. This punching bag is the best way to end my day.
Fearless is knowing yoga isn't your style. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits at fepblue.org/getmore.
No, I'm not for sale.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Colts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me back here on a Monday. Appreciate you guys as always. Continue to bring your questions and comments to the call-in line. It's 574-516-2881. Today, folks, we've got a great guest for you. We got Kevin Bowen from Colts.com. Kevin, thanks for joining us today, man.
Yeah, happy to join you, Matt.
Absolutely. Got a lot of stuff I want to run through with you. Of course, as I mentioned to you off air, I'm a little long-winded, so we can get into just about any kind of conversation for quite a while. But there's so much to talk about with this group that I haven't gained your insight or your point of view on to this point. We really have a lot of interesting camp battles. We have a lot of interesting pieces that have been added to the roster this year in the offseason. Of course, none bigger probably. As far as to the organization than Chris Ballard and those that he's brought in, like Ed Dodds and those guys. But where does your interest lie primarily with this roster when we get a chance to look at them in camp this year?
Boy, I don't even know where to start because there is so much unknown, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. You got to start with the injuries, you know, with Andrew Luck and Clayton Gathers, a name that I don't think maybe we're talking about enough, just in what his impact can mean on the defensive side of the ball and what it allows Ted Monachino to do with, you know, other question marks on your defense and how the NFL game has changed over the years. You need versatile defensive backs. You need guys that, you know, you can play, I think, in multiple levels of your defense, and Gathers is exactly that. Luck and Gathers, those injuries are going to be, you know, top of mind come July 29th when the Colts do a report for the first day of camp. And then after that, I just think, you know, how are the rules defined on defense? Mm-hmm. Vontae Davis is a day one starter. We know that. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, you know, there's so much unknown. You know, I mean, sure, Jabal Sheard, John Simon, you expect those guys to start. You know, Jonathan Hankins is going to start. But when you look at last year's defense versus this year's defense, you know, Davis is probably the only consistent piece that you can, you know, pencil into your starting lineup right now. You know, guys right. like Henry Anderson and Gathers and Kendall Lankford, you know, potentially will also be in there, but there's individual questions on all of those guys. Mm-hmm. So just what that unit looks like come week one, September 10th in LA, is really something that if you put a depth chart in front of me today, you know, I could maybe get six names right, maybe seven, but then you put another one in front of me a month from today and it could look totally different. So I think those are some of kind of the main topics that are going to be, you know, definitely fresh on my mind and things that I kind of run through pretty much every day throughout the offseason.
Yeah, and it, like you pointed to, especially we'll hit on the cornerback position first. With Vontae Davis, he's, you know, obviously the unquestioned starter there per his health. And as of right now, he's more than healthy. But you've got the rookie Quincy Wilson. You've got Rashawn Melvin there, who may end up being in a battle for that number two position, I would think, come opening day. Outside of that, I don't see anybody that's necessarily battling for that number two spot. But, I mean, you've got guys like Christopher Milton, Daryl Morris, who could possibly even start in the nickel. And this cornerback grouping is very interesting in itself, even though there's not a ton of, like, I don't want to say depth, but a lot of big name depth, a lot of guys that people are going to really latch onto and think are going to be huge playmakers. Those two guys, Wilson and Melvin, that's going to be a really interesting battle. And not only that, but how does the nickel corner position actually shake out?
Yeah, definitely. I think inside linebacker and cornerback, to me, the playing time is most up in the air. Mm-hmm. You know, especially for the depth spots at corner. Of course, Vontae Davis is going to be a starter, but like you're saying, Rashawn Melvin was the guy throughout the offseason program. And if there was maybe one surprise through the offseason program, you know, from a starting lineup standpoint, I was a little surprised we didn't see more of Quincy Wilson with the first team. I know Chuck Pagano had mentioned, you know, didn't come in the grace of shape, and that's something that he needed to work on. And then Ted Monachino and Chris Ballard both spoke at the end of the offseason program just how much better they felt like Wilson looked, you know, a month into the offseason versus what he looked like, you know, during rookie minicamp. Mm-hmm. So I do think Wilson is going to have a chance to supplant Melvin to be that starter. Besides that, though, it's really up in the air on guys that are going to challenge for playing time. Daryl Morris, I think, is your nickel corner. But Darius Butler is still a name to watch in my mind, because if Malik Hooker and Clayton Gathers are healthy, I just think Butler's too valuable of a guy to keep on the sideline.
For sure.
To me, he brings a veteran presence. He's a guy that I just think his playmaking has been there for you throughout. Really, he came in 2012, you know, during that bye week, you know, a handful of years ago, and that's what's been lacking the most out of your secondary is consistent playmaking, and Butler has been the guy out of all the guys that has been closest to that level. So I think Morris, you know, if Butler has to play safety, then Morris is your guy. But if not, you know, maybe Butler could play over there. You mentioned Chris Milton. Another guy that I'm eager to watch when camp gets here is Tevin Mitchell.
Yeah,
I think, you know, fans that really follow the team will recall that Mitchell was claimed by the Colts back in, I think it was the 2015 training camp, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
He was a sixth-round pick out of Washington, or of Washington's. Had suffered a shoulder injury, was on injury reserve, and Ryan Grigson claimed him, and then it's kind of been just injuries have plagued him ever since. But he's healthy. He was getting some first-team run and definitely a lot of second-team looks throughout training camp, or throughout the offseason program, I should say. He's a guy that I think has some versatility to potentially play in the inside as well. So he's a name that I'm going to be watching. But Wilson, you know, if you'd ask me after the draft, you know, who's your starting corner or corners, I'd say Vontae Davis and Quincy Wilson. And now I'd say it's Rashawn Melvin if you're going to play tomorrow. But, you know, Quincy Wilson's going to have plenty of opportunities come training camp to be a starter. But, yeah, that position group is really up for grabs, and just how you know, handle really corners number 2 through 5 and potentially 6 mm-hmm. On your 53-man roster.
Let me ask you this, just because I'm spitballing here, and I'm not the kind of guy that's going to say just because of their size and their physicality that the guy who's a big corner should be moved to safety. But do you think that there's any sort of like inner workings or combination between Butler and Melvin that they would work them to kind of back and forth between either a third safety role or the third corner role within any of the packages that they bring forward this year? Because I think that there's going to be a new look to the defense, not just obviously in personnel, but in the way that they set up their sub packages.
Yeah, no, definitely. And again, this goes back to Clayton Gathers for me, because I think he's such an X factor and allows you to do so many different things. I think if Gathers is healthy, you can move him down to that dime linebacker role, and then all of a sudden you can put Butler at safety and almost have kind of two center fielders back there mm-hmm. in Hooker and Butler. And then at the same time, you know, Melvin was a guy that we saw, I think, more on the outside last year. I think Daryl Morris would be your guy in that nickel corner, depending on, of course, you know, if Quincy Wilson can be a guy that is your number two corner. And, and then you have the TJ Green situation, and he was probably, you know, one of the bigger disappointments really of the offseason program, that you didn't see him seize those first team reps.
Right.
You know, it was no Malik Hooker, there was no Clayton Gathers, and there was Matthias Farley, you know, getting pretty much all of the first team looks throughout the mini camp alongside Darius Butler. And, you know, Farley played, you know, very little on defense last year. So mm-hmm. I think that is something to keep an eye on. And it goes back to, you know, what I said earlier about defining roles for the secondary. You know, what is Darius Butler's role? You know, does TJ Green earn any playing time? You know, and then, of course, the health. Is Clayton Gathers healthy? Can Malik Hooker get up to speed with, you know, missing the whole offseason program, which I don't think is big of an issue as maybe you felt like with T.J. Green making the jump after not playing a lot of safety at the collegiate level. But I think the mental worry with Hooker is a lot less based off, you know, what you hear from Urban Meyer and Greg Schiano and the Ohio State coaches talk about him. So, yeah, I mean, this secondary has to be playing at a high level. I mean, when the Colts defense has played well over the past few years, it's because the corner play in the secondary has been playing at a very high level. And I think without a dominant individual pass rusher, you know, guys like Vontae Davis and Quincy Wilson and the rest of the secondary, you know, have the potential to be a very strong unit, but we haven't seen that, you know, that group of four or five play together at all through the offseason program. So we're going to have to wait and see till training camp, you know, how quickly those guys can get on the same page.
And one more thing about the safeties, only because this secondary is not only of great importance for this season, but really interesting heading into camp. That the whole deal with T.J. Green not seizing the moment there in the offseason program, that was his opportunity to really say, look, I'm back, I'm here, I'm going to make my, you know, the best out of what I've got, I'm going to improve, I'm going to not give people a reason to question my coverage skills, my, you know, what's between my ears, so on and so forth. And then Mathias Farley, like you said, gets that opportunity because he shows the leadership ability to be able to direct traffic from the secondary and all of that involved. Would you really think, do you really think that, I guess, that Mathias Farley got that opportunity as more of a, hey, he's really playing well and he's got the skill, the requisite skill that we want from a number two or number three at that position, the strong safety type? Or is it more of, you know, they're sending a message to T.J. Green saying, look, we don't care if you've got all the physical ability in the world. If you've got what between your ears and you can do what you need physically to make this team, then you're going to get the nod.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm sure it's a little bit of both. I think with Farley, you know, Chris Ballard's made it clear that he doesn't care where you got drafted, how much money that you're making, you know, what happened before. He's going to make his own impressions on you. And I know Farley has individually impressed Ballard. But I was out there watching minicamp, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, there's Mathias Farley getting the first team look, you know, to start the first 11-on-11 session. Well, I'm sure T.J. Green will get the second look. Well, then all of a sudden, the second part of 11-on-11 drills happen, and there's Farley again. And the third, you know, different session of 11-on-11 drills happen, and there's Farley. You know, it felt like they would sprinkle Green in just a little bit. And, I mean, I'm sure maybe I missed a few of them, but I can't recall many reps that T.J. Green took, you know, had to be less than 5 or 10, you know, with the first team defense throughout the 3-day minicamp, or 2-day minicamp, I should say, because they ended up not practicing on that final day. So, yeah, I get the wake-up call, but at the same time, it's like you want to see him out there, because when Gethers and Hooker, whenever they do get on the field, that's going to jumble the safety reps even more. And Green's not going to have the opportunity to take the first team reps. And, you know, Ted Modichino selfishly probably is like, well, I need to get Malik Hooker up to speed. I want Clayton Gethers to be working, you know, alongside Hooker as well. You know, I don't have time to, you know, trial and error T.J. Green in there. So that's something that, you know, another thing to keep an eye on. You know, a lot of people have asked about, you know, Philip Dorsett and T.J. Green and both of those guys, you know, how important these years are for them, because from a pure athletic trait standpoint, you want them on the field. I mean, absolutely. Green has what you want as this day and age in the NFL. You know, he's similar to Hooker in just his rare athletic ability. I think Hooker moves laterally, you know, much better. But that's a guy that you want on the field. You like his size. You know, I know the Colts are working on a little bit of strong safety. You know, was that kind of an emergency plan? You know, if Gethers isn't ready to go, I'm not sure on that. So, I mean, Green is too good of a talent not to at least try, but once camp rolls around and Hooker and Gethers get healthy, you know, where do the reps come for him? You know, that's a question that I have.
And not only that, I mean, just to add to this real quick before we jump off of the secondary, Tyvis Powell and his background with Ed Dodds in Seattle. That he was brought in right after Dodds was, and there's obviously, I don't want to say necessarily a connection, but there's familiarity between those two. You have to assume that if he brought him in, there's a reason for it, and not necessarily to take T.J. Green's spot in the depth chart, but to battle for it significantly. And, you know, T.J. Green could not only be battling with Farley and maybe Tyson Graham or something like that, you know, for that second spot there, but also Tyvis Powell. I mean, I think this is a really interesting safety group, and if T.J. Green doesn't get it together, he's going to be on the outside looking in.
Yeah, I mean, how many safeties do you keep? You know, four or five probably.
Right.
With that fifth guy pretty much being kind of what Farley was last year. It's kind of a pure special teams guy. So, I mean, yeah, sitting here today, Green's, you know, on your 53. But if Powell shows, and remember, you know, Powell, you know, I think Seattle flirted around with playing him a little bit at corner.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Colts signed him, you know, he was signed, you know, as position as a defensive back.
Right.
So I don't think it's 100% locked in stone that Powell's going to be a safety. I assume that's where his first look will be because he was signed, I want to say, really late in the offseason program, maybe just before the start of minicamp. So, you know, didn't get a lot of looks at him. But, you know, he has that, you know, Seattle versatility that you think of from a defensive back. So, yeah, I mean, it goes without saying. I mean, TJ Green, yes, it's not a contract year for him, but this is just a massive training camp for him and for Phil Dorsett as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's kind of switch gears here and go to back to the front seven here before we head off to the offense and some other stuff. One of the things that I thought was most interesting heading into the offseason program is that the more guys I talked to, whether it was George or just some people that were down at OTAs or mini camp or whatever, talked about the amount of reps that Al Woods saw at the nose tackle position and that Hankins was primarily at the three tech a lot of the time. Does this, mm-hmm. I mean, I saw that this was one of the questions that was asked in your mailbag this past week, but is this, you know, a real situation, do you think, that they're doing that? Or is this basically, okay, we don't have Hassan Ridgeway because he's out with surgery. You know, David Perry kind of started initially at that zero, and then they kind of, you didn't hear much about him at all the rest of the offseason program, at least I didn't. And then you've got guys like T.Y. McGill and Grover Stewart, you know, that can rotate in and outside of that nose tackle in that three tech position. Is there really an opportunity, you think, for Al Woods to be the starting nose tackle? And conversely, do you think that Jonathan Hankins better serves this defense as a three tech like he played last year in New York?
Yeah, I think there is a really real possibility that Al Woods is your day one starter. Defensive line totally up in the air for me, though, with going back to what I said earlier, defining roles.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like with Hankins, the Colts would feel very comfortable with him starting at nose on first down or playing the three technique. I think what will play into it more isn't necessarily maybe where Hankins is most effective, but it's where the Colts feel they have better depth at the three or the nose.
Mm-hmm.
So if Al Woods shows, you know, quality starting potential, then I think the Colts feel good about it and they can move Hankins over. Personally, I think when healthy, the three best down defensive linemen, and when healthy, again, needs to be emphasized a lot, is Henry Anderson, Kendall Langford, and Jonathan Hankins.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we didn't see Langford, of course, participate at all during the offseason program, but, you know, for me, if you can get, you know, him back to his 2015 self, which I know he's, you know, a year and a half later and you know, battled the knee injury all through last year once he suffered that in the preseason, and then, of course, get Henry Anderson back to his rookie self, I mean, those guys are pretty good players to have on the field kind of flanking Hankins. Now, Woods is your more prototypical nose, you know, get in there, absorb blockers, you know, eat up space, blah, blah, blah. But with Hankins, the thing that's interesting is, you know, he played so well as a nose with the Giants. And of course, that was a little bit of a different scheme than what he's going to be seeing here in Indianapolis. So
right. That's
why I think the Colts, later in the offseason program, went with more of the Woods at the nose, and then when you went on to passing downs, Hankins kind of slid inside a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, can still be an effective pass rusher from the interior. But the X factors then were you didn't have Langford, and of course we haven't seen Ridgeway either. Not that I think Ridgeway would push for a starting job, but Langford
right. Definitely
should. So that is a storyline to watch in training camp. Is full pads are coming on, so that separates that group a little more, and then Langford is back. And if Langford and Anderson show that they're just too good to keep off the field, that's where I think to myself, okay, well, Hankins can play nose tackle. But if Monachino wants to look more like a 3-4 defense, which is something that he mentioned late in the offseason program, which I thought was interesting, I believe he used the line something like, we look more like the rule and not the exception when referring to the personnel of that 3-4 defense. And I think specifically he's talking about the front seven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have a David Perry who does not look like a 3-4 nose tackle. You know, Perry, I think, you know, filled in adequately for the past couple of years, but he's not your big mauler that you think of when you think of a 3-4 nose. Al Woods, I think, is closer to that.
Right.
So that makes me lead to believe that I think Al Woods, they feel comfortable with him being a starter, but we won't know until the full pads come on with that group, you know, how well they look in the trenches, and then, of course, you know, how quickly Kendall Langford can get back up to speed.
Right, and one of the things that I think when you look at Anderson and Langford's injury history, you also have, like we said, Ridgeway in there with the off-season surgery, but I think that all expectations are for him to be back and healthy and ready to go. The guy that has like confused me, and not because of his skill set, but because of where the Colts currently have him on the roster, is Terrell Basham. Now, do they move him into a 5-tech position as a defensive end in this 3-4 scheme, or do they use him as that outside linebacker?
Yeah, I still think he's an outside linebacker. I believe on the roster, and that's what you're referring to, he's listed as a D end.
Right.
And I know that stirred up some of the conversation on Twitter, and I still think he's an outside linebacker. I mean, when we watched him work during offseason program, he was definitely an outside linebacker, getting some second team work, you know, behind Simon and Sheard. And the Colts love the 6'4", 266 part of Basham, and they feel like he can play on three downs. But yeah, because personally, it's crowded on the defensive line. I mean, you know, I've broken it down a little bit, the 53-man jumble puzzle, and you're going to cut, you know, some combination of Marcus Hunt, David Perry, you know, T.Y. McGill, you know, try to sneak Grover Stewart on the practice squad, which I think is, you know, pretty lofty. I mean, you're going to cut one to two of those guys if you're keeping Woods, Langford, Anderson, Hankins, Ridgeway. Because you just can't keep, you know, more than six or seven on your defensive line. So, yeah, I believe Basham is a backup outside linebacker.
Mm-hmm. I do think that he and Sheard both offer a little bit of versatility there to where they could go as a fourth down lineman. Sheard started his career that way. I don't know if necessarily Basham does that or not. I did see him in a 4-point, you know, sometimes in Ohio with the film that I looked at, but not often. I mean, I think that he is truly an outside linebacker, and that's what honestly confused me the most. Is that not so much that the question was whether he could play defensive end, but that they actually had him listed there on the roster. I thought that was a little strange, but
It was odd, and I tell you, know, I tell him so many times, just don't, you know, people ask me about roster weights and all that stuff, and you know, I know 100% of it probably isn't as accurate. You know, I remember even thinking back to high school, we had a kid who was a 5'11 on the football roster and 6'4 on the basketball roster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just one of those things where, you know, sometimes the roster positions and weights and heights can, you know, kind of differ a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I think right now going into camp, you're looking at outside linebacker at Sheard and Simon as your starters. We didn't see Akeem Ayers a ton during the offseason program because of an injury. But I would think Ayers, Mingo, Basham, I hope I'm not forgetting anybody, but those are kind of the three immediate names that come to mind as, you know, depth guys off the edge.
Yeah. Well, they've got LeVar Edwards, Mount, and Sickles there, but I don't know that any of those guys are going to really push for the roster there. I don't think that's
I mean, that's another group you probably keep five or six. No.
Yeah.
And you know, if Mingo, Ayers, and Basham show any glimmer of pass rushing, they've got to be on the field come third down. I mean, that's just point blank period. Because if right now, if you're the Rams and you're preparing for the Colts week one, you aren't scared by an individual pass rusher. I mean, Sheard, I think, has the potential to be, you know, I think he could be a double-digit sack guy. You know, he had, what, eight or eight and a half a couple of years ago with New England.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he's going to get the opportunities here in Indianapolis to have plenty of pass rushing opportunities. But, you know, there's no Robert Quinn, of course, on that side of the ball. There's no guy that you are really fearing week one if you're the Rams of saying, okay, double him. We need a running back to chip. We need a tight end on his side. You know, all that stuff.
Exactly.
So if Basham or any of those guys can emerge – and show that, they've got to get on the field and get on the field early.
Yeah. Now we'll wrap up the defense here. Is there a dark horse you think that in somewhere on this defensive side of the roster that you think could possibly make the 53 man coming out of the preseason that a lot of people aren't expecting to?
Yeah, I mentioned Tevin Mitchell earlier. You know, I I guess if you were filling out your cornerback depth chart right now, he would probably, you know, have the chance to be on it anyways. I just think he's got rare size. I know he worked at gunner, you know, some first team, second team gunner as well. You know, it's probably too early to read a lot of special teams into that, but we did see him work there during the offseason program. So he would be a name kind of in the secondary to watch. Defensive line, we've kind of gone over that group. You know, inside linebacker, you know, that's a position group that we haven't talked about. You know, nobody really to make the 53, I guess, out of that group, because I think you do have your four or five guys pretty much set in stone there. But you know, John Bostic was a name that was mentioned, you know, throughout the offseason program. And you know, he's definitely not in jeopardy, I think, to missing the roster, and he probably doesn't answer this question. But I think if you're going into training camp right now, he is a definite favorite at inside linebacker. It seems like the staff was really, really pleased with how he has come back from that foot injury and how he looked kind of moving sideline to sideline. So I think he has emerged a little bit to be a starter there. And I'm curious to see, you know, what does Anthony Walker look like once he kind of gets a chance to put the full pads on, because his leadership has been praised, you know, so much since he was drafted out of Northwestern in the fifth round. And you look on that side of the ball right now, and who are the leaders? You know, who is your signal caller? You know, who are your defensive captains? I mean, I have no idea the answers to any of those questions. And that's why I said earlier, Darius Butler is too much of a leader in my eyes to keep off the field. So I'm curious to see. Yeah, you're actually going to throw Walker out there because he can communicate and he can talk well. But if he shows, you know, some other signs of, okay, this guy can, you know, physically, he fits what he has between the ears, then I think, you know, he's a guy that could, you know, potentially earn some playing time at inside linebacker. But, you know, if you're talking undrafted guys, no one really comes to mind right off the top of my head. You know, I want to see more of Nate Harrison as well, the fifth-round pick out of Temple. I'd like to see more of him. But, yeah, there's not an undrafted guy on defense that comes to mind as a guy that might be on the outside looking in right now that could find his way on the 53-man roster.
Now, Luke Rhodes was the guy that has kind of gotten my attention only because of what he was being used in early OTAs. If Walker doesn't seem to fit the bill of what they thought he was, I think that might be the only option for what I could see.
Yeah, no, Rhodes is a name. And actually, now that I think about it, Dante Blackman at corner is a name that I think some fans should watch as well. Out of Kennesaw State, he's actually the first Kennesaw State player ever in the NFL. He was a rookie minicamp tryout guy. So he wasn't one of your first undrafted free agents.
Right.
That initial group of, you know, 18 or so that was signed, you know, the Sunday or Monday after the draft. So Blackman impressed. I know Chuck Pagano singled him out before. And we talk about the depth at corner. You know, who knows who's going to be your focus at corner. So Blackman is a name to keep an eye on once training camp gets here.
Now, I did also see that you kind of presume that Banner might be on the outside looking in there on the offensive line as far as for the initial 53. I agree with you on that, but is there a guy that you think, first of all, I don't think that the Colts would have any issues getting him back after he's waived. I mean, just my assumption, I'm not so sure that he's, with his enormous size and weight, his lack of speed or his lack of, I don't even want to call it burst, but ability to drop into his pass set seems to be an issue for me, at least from what I saw on tape of him at USC. And I get the upside in year two, as you explained, which I'd be fine with. I just don't see a spot for him right now, but I do see some interesting guys around the depth of this offensive line, such as Jerry Ugakwe. And obviously, you know, there's some of the guys in the middle there, like Adam Redmond and Deshaun Bond, that are interesting to watch. Fawn Cooper as well. But Jeremy Vucinovic has gotten a lot of rotation in this offseason program. Can you talk about him a little bit?
Yeah. And I will say, I think Banner will make the 53. I don't think he will be dressing on game days.
Okay.
Right now, I think, you know, let's say ideally you keep 9 on your offensive line, possibly 10, but let's say you keep 9.
Mm-hmm.
Your four depth spots, and I guess I should clarify, I'm going off a starting offensive line here of Costanzo, Muhor, Kelly, Haig, and Clark. That would be my starting offensive line. Mm-hmm. So I got room for four depth spots. my guys dressing on game day would be Brian Schwenke as kind of your interior, kind of your Jonathan Harrison. You know, if any guy gets hurt at those middle three spots, he goes in there.
Right.
And then Denzel Good would kind of be your – he'd be your Joe Wrights. You know, he'd be your swing tackle, you know, potentially could play a little right guard, I guess, but, you know, would be your backup tackle. And then my other two guys would be Vujovic, like you mentioned, and then that's where Banner would come into play. So those would be my kind of eighth and ninth linemen. But when Muhort was out during the offseason program, and Schwenke and Good were also out towards the end of the offseason program, it was Vujovic, and I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right, to be honest with you.
We never do. We always say
it. Yeah, he was your guy at left guard. So I think he is kind of, you know, I secured a roster spot would be way too premature to say that, but I mean, I think he certainly has the experience with Philbin on being on the roster and practice squad for a large portion of last year that Colts feel pretty comfortable with him as a possibility as an interior lineman. So, yeah, I think he, you know, if I were kind of ranking your backups right now, I mean, he would be, you know, my eighth or ninth guy, and I think that there is, you know, a large gap between someone emerging from 10 through, you know, 14 or however many offensive linemen are on the roster. Von Cooper is probably the most popular name that you hear fans talk about. We didn't see really him get, you know, any, of course, first-team run when Muhort was out. And, you know, with that group, more than any other position group, and, you know, I'm not breaking any news here, but without full pads coming on during the offseason program, you have no idea, you know, what those guys are really going to look like and how the depth is going to shake out up front. So right now, I think the starting five, in my opinion, is pretty set, and it's going to take a lot for a guy like Schwenke or Good to all of a sudden crack that starting lineup. But yeah, if I had to make my nine, Schwenke, Good, Vujovic, and Zach Banner, those would be my nine on the 53-man roster.
It's an interesting group this year. Are you as high on them as far as their development into this year as I think? I know that I am. I think that there are several people that are, but I think people still continue to go with the national narrative that says that the offensive line is garbage. I just don't agree with that right now. I mean, as young as they were from last year and where I see their arrow pointing, I think that we're in good company as far as where this team can be, as far as up front on the offensive line, either this year or at the latest 2018.
Yeah, I am. I think the line is definitely going to be at a much more consistent level of play, you know, building off what you saw towards the end of last year, specifically with Clark and Haig working together at right tackle and right guard. I mean, I'll be honest, I was, you know, if you're a Colts fan, I would have been pretty frightened about LaRaven Clark going into the starting lineup.
Oh, yeah.
You know, week 15 with, you know, virtually, what did he play? I think he had played like five plays in his NFL career going into Minnesota, Oakland, and Jacksonville. And, you know, he allows a combined one hit, no sacks over the final three games. So that's why I was really confused this offseason when people were like, well, you know, you got to take a tackle. You still need to upgrade a tackle. And it's like, well, you know, you drafted Clark in the third round for a reason. I know it was a different regime, but when Ballard came in here and started talking about the O-line at a very high level, I mean, you know, he's been, you know, really effusive in his praise of Ryan Grigson for, you know, what he got up front. That's when I figured the Colts, you know, were okay with what they had on the offensive line. So, and I think something that shouldn't be overlooked either is just the second year under Joe Philbin. You know, it seemed like when Philbin came in here, he totally revamped the technique and just how the Colts were going to go about offensive line play. I think that meant, you know, everybody was kind of starting at square one, you know, including Costanzo and Muhort, in terms of guys that you would label as veterans. So I think having the five starting offensive linemen, you know, now in a second season together with Philbin, I think that's something that you can't overlook really as well.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that. I think Philbin did a nice job getting those guys in better shape towards the end of the year, you know. And I think that, you know, I think, like you said, all of us were surprised when we saw how well LaRaven Clark played in those last few games. I think that was a big jump for him, not only physically, but between his ears, that he can definitely do it. And him coming out of the the system that he did in college to coming into this offensive scheme, that's night and day. And for him to make that kind of development between training camp, where we saw him initially, which was really scary, and then into those last few games, that is a huge jump for him. It's quick development, in my opinion, for a guy that did play in that system in college. And it's just really exciting. I'm excited for this offensive line. I think they're going to surprise a lot of people. And I think they're going to surprise actually a lot of Colts fans too, because I don't think that a lot of people have really given them the, okay, I think these guys are going to be good. You know, I think that a lot of them are still very skeptical about what this line can prove. But I'm excited, and it sounds like you and a lot of other people are as well. When we look over here at the rest of the skill positions outside of quarterback right now, running back, wide receiver, and tight end, is there, aside maybe from Dorsett, who kind of seems to be, you know, teeter-tottering on roster to non-roster, who's a guy maybe at running back or tight end that you think has an opportunity to kind of surprise some people and make this roster? I think that Doyle Williams and Swoop is a pretty fair top or three tight end group. But a lot of people like Darryl Daniels, just the same at running back, Gore, Turbin, Mack, and then you got that fourth guy that really hangs up in the air with Pope, Ferguson, and Crossan. Is there any in either one of those two groups, or the wide receiver group for that matter, that you think might be able to bust through? Because ultimately, as a wide receiver, Quandre offers some return ability. Now, Ferguson offers a little bit of that as well, but we saw what he was doing in the offense last year, and he really has to make a significant jump in my eyes to get himself back to the 53-man roster. But you've got interesting guys at wide receiver like Bug Howard, JoJo Natson, right, who also I've heard has offered, you know, some lightning speed, and there's some other guys back there. So there's a whole group within this skill receiver group on offense that is really interesting going into camp. Touch on a couple of guys that maybe pique your interest the most.
Yeah, let's start running back. I mean, like you said, you know, I think you got a pretty clear cut top three there with Gore, Turbin, and Mack. I am really here to see just, you know, how much is Mack used, because it goes without saying his skill set is something that the Colts have longed for at the running back position and haven't had in quite some time. Just too unique of a skill set not to, I think, incorporate it in a weekly game plan. You know, as long as he can handle some blocking responsibilities, I think you got to find ways to get the ball in his hands at least a few times, you know, every game, and kind of see if he can, you know, turn into what we saw those Oakland, kind of those young Oakland running backs look like, you know, when they, you know, had a huge day against the Colts in week 16. Dalton Crossan is probably the name that I'm going to be watching the most at running back during training camp. I know Chris Ballard has touched on him. A great versatility, you know, an all-purpose guy. I think it's, you know, maybe him or Ferguson for that fourth spot. And I know Pope is a late signing that you probably should throw in there as well. But I think the Colts would really love kind of a jitterbug type guy as that fourth back that can, you know, is pretty much going to play special teams. But, you know, offers a skill set that is totally a 180 from what you have in Gore and Turbin. So Crossan is a name that I'm going to be watching. Wideout, I've written about him several times now. He's probably not too much of a dark horse anymore based off what he did late last year. But Chester Rogers is a real threat to earn playing time.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think he's a real threat to be your number three receiver.
Yeah.
And not exclusively. I'm not saying, you know, he's your number three wideout for, you know, 70-80% of the snaps. But he's a guy that I think maybe back in April we would have said, okay, your number three wideout is either – kind of a hybrid between Kamar Aiken and Phil Dorsett. Do you want the speed? Do you want your slot guy to be the guy that can kind of, you know, really, really exploit the middle of the field and get some linebackers matched on him? Then you want Dorsett. Do you want a kind of a power guy in the red zone that can make plays on third and short, and et cetera? Then it's more of an Aiken. Now I think it's a Rodgers or an Aiken.
Yeah.
And Dorsett's going to have chances. I mean, he's going to get healthy because he missed the mini camp. And I know Chris Ballard likes him, and Ballard wants to see, you know, I'm not saying that Chris Ballard would have taken him, you know, in the first round, but I think Ballard, you know, Ballard comes from speedy wideouts. You know, he's seen what Tyreek Hill can do, of course.
For sure.
So he wants to see what Dorsett can do. But right now, Chester Rogers' consistency is just too good to overlook. So The problem for me in saying there's an undrafted or an under-the-radar wideout to make it 53 is I just don't see where the room is. Because I think Rodgers is your returner. Personally, I'd keep five wideouts and have Rodgers be your returner.
I like that.
I think he showed late last year, you know, yeah. And you're going to have to, you know, cut the numbers at some spot on this roster, you know, when it comes down to roster cutdown. And for me, it's the luxury of keeping a six wideout, I don't think is there. And the injuries are going to dictate that, you know, come what, late August. But right now, I'd go with Rodgers as your returner. You know, in terms of a kick returner, you don't really need much anymore. Yeah, there's the Jordan Todmans of the world that, you know, change a game, but the return game is just a little bit different, I think, in the NFL based off what it used to be. And I think a punt returner, once Rodgers kind of, you know, got his feet under him, he really was a nice returner for you late in the year.
Yeah.
So that's why I think that he offers you, you're kind of killing a couple birds with one stone there. That he, you know, he isn't just a kind of a milquetoast wideout to where he's just playing wideout. You know, he's a guy that can go out there and contribute significantly on special teams. So that's why the Bug Howards of the world, you know, when he was on the roster, Trey Griffey, you know, I know I'm blanking on some of the undrafted wideouts. You know, JoJo, I just don't think he gives you enough as a wideout. Similar to Quan Bray to merit a roster spot, even though Bray was a tremendous returner when he was on the 53. Tight end, I mean, Daniels is definitely the most popular name. You know, Chris Ballard is mentioned specifically, I think, of the undrafted group. Obviously, Thomas Hennessy is going to be a long snapper, but, you know, Crossen and Daniels seem to be the most popular names of guys that could crack the 53-man roster. I'm with you. I think Brandon Williams, you know, has a nice stranglehold on that number three tight end spot. When Swope had to miss time during late in the offseason program, it was Brandon Williams. And he's taking a lot of first-team reps alongside Jack Doyle. And I just think you feel comfortable a little bit with Williams, you know, having some veteran experience, being a special teams guy, et cetera. And Daniels is a guy that, you know, has that athletic ability that, you know, I think, you know, people thought could have been lifted coming out of Washington. So, yeah, Crossen at running back, Daniels at tight end, those are names, you know, kind of on the outside right now that could find their way into the roster.
Yeah, it is an interesting group, and I like the thought process of keeping only five wide receivers if that really, you know, if not only if Rodgers continues to build on that return possibility. Like I said, after he, you know, initially couldn't really find his ground there in the first couple attempts of punt returns, you know, I think he caught a couple inside the 10 and, you know, made a couple. I don't know if he fumbled or what the other one was. It was a couple where he didn't really know where he was at on the field, I think. But after that,
right,
he really improved and looked really good doing it. It just, because like you said, they're really going to have to squeeze to get this down to 53, I think. They're really going to have to weigh what does somebody offer on special teams who isn't a starter or even maybe a direct backup to a lot of these positions, because they have to build this team in all three facets of the game. They can't just build an offense and defense and just say, I don't know, we're just going to put you on special teams and see what you can do. They've really got their work cut out for them, I think, this year in a lot of positions as well. You know, in funny that you said cut down the wide receivers. I actually cut my offensive line to 8 instead of 9.
Did you?
Okay. Yeah. And the
only reason I say 9 is because, and I have to go back through my notes, I feel like there's a time where Ballard even threw out the number 10 on the offensive line. And I know that's kind of that's dreaming big in terms of injuries.
Yeah.
But, you know, God, maybe I'm forgetting something, but I feel like the Colts had 10 offensive linemen on the 53-man roster for large chunks of last season. And more of that, I think, it was to do with injury than anything. But that's why when I'm crunching numbers right now, I'm squeezing things more on offense just because of all the uncertainty on defense.
Yeah.
And I think you're, you know, and I'm not, you know, again, breaking news to anybody here, but more of your special teamers come on that side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball. So that's why, you know, I say 9 offensive linemen, you know, 5 wideouts, you know, and at tight end and running back, maybe it's just you keep seven total, you know, either four running backs or either three, you know, either four running backs and three tight ends or four tight ends and three running backs.
Yeah.
And then on defense, you know, maybe you are keeping, you know, 11, 12 linebackers, which, you know, seems like such a high number, but, you know, I think it'll definitely be in the double digits there. And same with the secondary, you know, maybe it is a situation where you're a guy like Tyvus Powell is just too good to pass up, and you're keeping six safeties or something that, you know, looks crooked to us now, but, you know, when you start squeezing things out and you start thinking about special teams and how your roster looks when you're dressing on game days, you know, that's when, you know, last year I think people were frustrated at times that T.Y. McGill and Zach Kerr were inactive, but, you know, that's just life in the NFL. You can't, when you're playing a 3-4 scheme, you're only dressing five, you know, maybe six defensive linemen. And if those guys are true interior guys, they aren't helping you in many other places. So I know it's early and, you know, it's not a lot of, you know, roster mechanic talk right now, but, you know, if I were kind of building a 53, five wideouts is what I would go with, because you don't need Chester Rogers to go play a bunch at wideout. I mean, he might just be too good to keep him off the field there, but, you know, you have Dorsett and Aiken that you feel somewhat, you know, good about. That's why I feel like Rogers can help you out as a returner, because I've just never been a guy that, unless you have an Antonio Brown talent, I just don't like playing starter type players as a returner. That's just me. But so yeah, that's why I think Rogers allows you the luxury to have five wideouts and then, you know, add another body somewhere else.
Yeah, it's really interesting, too. Like you said, you could go in a variety of different ways with the running back tight end. If you keep seven total, I mean, you may keep four running backs, which I think is fairly par for the course for the Colts in the past. But then, you know,
yeah,
if you really like what you're seeing out of Mac, you don't need a fourth running back. Maybe Daryl Daniels is lighting people up in the special teams areas, you know, and can, you know, lay a hat on somebody, and you bring him in for special teams help and another tight end just for, you know, just because he's the guy that fills that position towards the back end of the roster. There is a lot of interesting things that are going to shake out as we get closer to camp and through camp. And I'm excited for preseason, because I think with the new cut down formula, the way that they have, you know, you cut straight down to 53, you get four games of these guys being able to try to prove themselves. And it couldn't really happen in a better year, where the competition mantra that Chris Ballard has brought to this team and this organization really appears to be sinking into some of those guys from, let's say, 26 all the way, or, you know, even 30 all the way down to 90. Those guys really feel like they've got a chance. If they put it on the field, then they can make this 53. And I think that's really big for this group.
Yeah, and I think the preseason schedule is a great slate to evaluate talent as well. I mean, you got, you know, three playoff teams to start the season. You know, Dallas and Pittsburgh, two of the better rosters, I think, in the NFL, when your starters are going to play the most. And, you know, I know we are talking about a lot of back end of the roster guys, but, you know, it's just going to be an interesting preseason to me. You know, how much do the Colts want to play their starters in the preseason? You know,
right,
we've heard Chris Ballard, he wants to tackle. I mean, he's made that clear during training camp.
And I think they need,
you know,
to.
He wants guys to spar. Yeah, definitely. And I think you got to be physical, and you got to prepare your body, not only prepare your own body for a 16-game season and potentially more, but, you know, just prepare yourself for what it looks like week one when the whistle blows.
Right.
You know, it's one thing to thud Todd Gurley in the open field. It's another thing to bring Todd Gurley to the ground. So, you know, can you train yourself during training camp now that Pagano is saying that, you know, they've definitely discussed it, and Ballard sounds like he's ready to, you know, tackle live day one if it was allowed in CBA. So, yeah, I think that's an interesting storyline. The luck, you know, how much does luck play in the preseason? If that's a storyline, you know, how much does he need? How much do you feel comfortable? Do you ramp him up? Does, you know, as crazy as it sounds, does luck play in week four of the preseason? You know,
right,
does it come to the point where he needs to throw 15 passes, you know, in a game setting, or do you feel like you can script that somewhere else? And then, of course, on the defensive side of the ball, you know, how much does Ted Monachino want his starters to play together? You know, how
right
much does he want that communication level to be there in the preseason? You know, do we see that starting 11 play, you know, late into the first quarter, week one, you know, well into the second quarter, week two, you know, deep into the third quarter in week three of the preseason? I mean, those are all things that, we haven't really had these types of questions in past training camps and preseasons for the Colts. And now we do. And I think they're very relevant and they're really going to impact, you know, you hear the over under of 8.5 wins, 9.5 wins for the Colts. You know, I think you're going to see some answers, you know, trickle out of training camp, where in years past, you know, maybe we overlooked training camp and preseason a little bit, and then all of a sudden, boom, the Colts are starting 0-2.
Yeah.
So yeah, tons of questions here in, you know, a little less than, I guess, 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's exciting, and it's gaining on us quick, and it's about stinking time. I just think that this physicality, you know, the story that the Colts may tackle or may be more physical in camp was like, I think nationally they thought itself as like just a cute story to add to their as an article. But I think here locally, at least in my opinion, this is something that they absolutely need. And it's not just to see what everybody's got. It's more or less because they should have been doing it in the past, I think. Anytime you have training camp with 90 guys on the field at the same time, you are going to have guys step wrong, even doing walkthrough stuff, and sprain an ankle. It doesn't matter. Right. You are going to have injuries.
You look at Vic Ballard.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
You know, he was a non-contact. I remember like it was yesterday. It was just one of those kind of dump passes to a running back. He plants, he makes a move upfield, and boom, he's down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even Donald Thomas, it was an 11-on-11 drill when he tore the quad, I think, the second time. But he barely engaged the guy, and then he goes down. So, yeah, I mean, I get where the coaching staff comes from. I get the friendly fire, and I understand that. And if I were a coach and, you know, whatever, Vontae Davis goes down trying to tackle somebody, yeah, that's going to keep me up at night. But that's life. I mean, that is NFL life. That is football life.
Right.
You know, that stuff's going to happen. So that's why I think we are going to see more of it. And like you said, I mean, that is a story locally, Matt. I mean, that is a major story because we haven't seen it. And tackling has been an issue for this team early on in seasons. And the 0-2 starts have been 3 straight years. And even going back, I mean, the Colts are just 1-9 in their first 2 games under Pagano. I think in 2012... you lost the first two, right? It was Chicago and Minnesota.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, and then Oakland was the opener the next year, and you won that. So I think you only won 2 games of the first two of these 5 seasons.
And that came down to the last play, early on.
Right. The Oakland game was a great Toler pick in the end zone, and then the Minnesota game was a Vinatieri game-winning field goal. So, yeah, you have got to do something. And I think this goes back to what, you know, Jim Mercer was referencing at the league meetings and evaluating Chuck Pagano. It's, you know, we're going to evaluate him on a lot of things. And I think that specifically is one of those things, is how physical is this team early on in the season? How quickly can these young guys get on the same page? And when I say young guys, I mean all the new faces too.
Right.
So how quickly can you get this defense up to speed to where it's not, you know, it's not a mental task for them, you know, to feel comfortable, you know, playing at the snap of a whistle. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of questions, but I think the physical aspect of camp is something that we are going to see and that we need to see because, you know, it doesn't take any Colts fan, you know, too much of a memory to conjure up, you know, the Lamar Miller play from last year, the Allen Hurns touchdown in London, you know, Theo Riddick and Amir Abdullah in the open field week 1. I mean, those are 3 losses in the first 5 weeks of the season.
Yeah,
and those are 3 games that all went. You know, the London game probably didn't go down to the wire that much, although I think it was a 1-possession game at the end. You know, definitely Detroit and Houston were 2 reasons why, you know, you were sitting on the outside looking in come January.
Yeah, and I agree. I think this year, like you said, there's going to be a lot that's involved in the evaluation for Pagano, and I think, you know, it's always been, you know, getting the same group together, keeping the group together. Like the offensive line this year in the offseason, you know, a lot of people are talking about you get the same group together, continuity is great. But this year, he's really going to be based on building chemistry with a lot of new faces. And, you know, I think chemistry actually is more important, in my opinion, than continuity. Continuity is great, but you have to have chemistry between those offensive linemen. You can work together with each other for 3 years straight, but if something doesn't work, it doesn't matter. You know, that's just all there is to it. Building the chemistry from within is something that he's really going to have to do, especially defensively, because a lot of the offense is mostly the same. You only have a few pieces like Aiken, Mack, and, you know, a couple, maybe a guy or two on the offensive line that wasn't here last year that's going to have to learn multiple positions like Schwenke or something like that. But chemistry is going to be absolutely pertinent to this team's success. Let's wrap it up here and talk about Luck for a few minutes. I really appreciate your time today, Kevin. It's been a lot of fun. But I'm going to ask you initially, is Steven Morris going to break into this 53 and overcome Scott Tolzien, or do you think it's even remotely possible that the Colts keep three quarterbacks?
I'm going to say no. And that was a question that I definitely had at the start of the offseason program. Another surprise that I had after that 9 weeks was that we didn't see more Steven Morris with that first team offense.
Interesting.
I honestly can't recall hardly any reps that we saw Steven Morris with the first team offense. And, you know, pessimistic me or glass half empty me thought to myself, well, does that mean, you know, Scott Tolzien has to be ready week one? Whereas the Colts are looking at this like Luck might not be ready, and right, Tolzien needs all the first team work he can get. And that's probably me reading way too much into it. Because I think if Luck was in serious jeopardy week one of not playing week one, I felt like another veteran would have been brought in, just given what Chris Bauer has wanted to do throughout this roster. But yeah, right now, that's Scott Tolzien's job to lose, the backup job. I thought Tolzien threw it fine. I mean, I think he had one struggling day, maybe the first day of rookie minicamp or the first day of veteran minicamp, and then had a really strong day to end it. But yeah, I think if it's a short-term thing, if you need Tolzien in a week, you know, I'm fine with him being your backup. I think if you're a Colts fan, I think, you know, against Pittsburgh last year, yeah, does he want to play back inside the 10? Of course. But, you know, T.Y. had some drops. Moncrief had some drops. Dorsett had some drops. I mean, he didn't get a lot of help around him either in that game.
Not at all.
And then, of course, Antonio Brown and company speak for themselves on the other side of the ball. So, yeah, and it goes back to number crunching for me. I just don't see a way you keep 53 men on your roster, or three quarterbacks on your 53-man roster. But Morris is going to get a chance here in the preseason, probably more so than he normally would. I just assume Luck's reps in the preseason won't be the same. Now, they might look differently. You know, it might be one of those things where, you know, Luck plays more in week three and week four of the preseason than he would in week one or week two, or, you know, who knows how that's going to be divvied up. So maybe Morris does get more first-team work with extended action in training camp. But right now, it's Scott Tolzien.
Interesting. I'm a fan of Steven Morris just from what he showed in the preseason last year. And basically, also what Scott Tolzien showed in training camp. He was really scary, early in camp.
Yeah.
And, you know, even preseason didn't look like he was much of anything to back up Luck. I think that a lot of his issues were released from him as he got into the Pittsburgh game. I thought, like you said, he didn't get a lot of help. I thought he played really well, and he overdid my expectations of him for sure. I'm just so intrigued by Steven Morris's ability to get out of the pocket. He's got a live arm, and he offers a lot, I think, in terms of between the ears and physically, to get, you know, to maybe overtake somewhat of a statue at Scott Tolzien at the number two spot. But like you said, a lot of that is going to be, you know, it's all going to shake itself out with the reps this preseason and in camp with Luck, ultimately, probably for a large part of that on the sidelines. And Pagano's spoken to him ultimately having whatever you want to call it, a pitch count, probably in camp too. I mean, even with no contact, just doing the simple passes, he's going to run through a few of those guys, and then the backups are going to go and they're going to do the rest of the drill. I mean, he's not going to overthrow, or he's not going to get himself to where he is tired every single day. They're wanting to work him out, of course, but they can't risk anything being pushed ahead of schedule. You know, that's just not an intelligent approach. But
no way. I mean, it's like a baseball pitcher coming off the DL, you know. At first he does a bullpen session, or he long tosses, or, you know, how, you know, then he throws a simulated game, then he goes down to AAA and throws it. You know, there's going to be progression with that. So yeah, I mean, Morris is going to have a chance. I think it also just goes back to, you know, what do you want in a backup quarterback? Do you want a guy that has a huge ceiling and you might need him for one start during the year and he has no experience and, you know, who knows what's going to happen? Or do you want more of a safety valve than a guy like Tolzien to where, okay, you know, he's not going to make too many mistakes, he's going to keep you in the game, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I think that's the debate, that in an ideal scenario you'd have room for three quarterbacks. But in my eyes, I just think when you start crunching numbers, it's really hard to keep three on a 53-man roster. But if Steve Morse goes out and has a great preseason, you know, that's going to change everything.
Yeah, it could, but I agree with you. I don't think either way.
Could, yeah.
Regardless of that, that they keep three quarterbacks in any situation.
Too tough in my eyes.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? They didn't lose Steve Morse when they waived him last year. So I mean, I think that if they feel that everything's equal there, I think they'll be happy with him being on the practice squad again. So let's kind of finish this up here with just about Luck. We've talked about his injuries a little bit, you know, here and there, and it is an issue with, you know, kind of seeing where he comes back. I'm not too worried about it. Even if he misses the first couple weeks of the season, it just does not worry me because of the way that this team is being built for the future. And you know, if they play really good this year and they have a season that surprises everybody, that's great. But this team is being built for 2018. I just don't think there's any question about that. Luck, on the other hand, there are some things that he really needs to improve on. I think with only 13 interceptions last year, it doesn't immediately strike you as an issue. But I broke down recently on Stampede Blue all of his interceptions, actually, to kind of see, you know, is it the offensive line that was at fault? Was it Andrew Luck just throwing the ball all willy-nilly? And I think that I came to the realization that either 10 or 11 of his interceptions were on him. Despite any pressure, there was some pressure at times from the outside where Luck could have stepped up, where he continued to backpedal and just threw the ball up in the air, or he threw into, you know, a ton of coverage or just whatever. A second year of Brian Schottenheimer with Andrew Luck, because I felt like in training camp last year there was such good connection between those two. I thought that he really helped Luck kind of see some of the more fundamental aspects of the position. I think with Luck's injury, and the combination of another year with Brian Schottenheimer, that we could see the best Andrew Luck ever this year. Is that far-fetched to you, or is that something that's possibly attainable, you think?
No, I don't think it's far-fetched at all. And the biggest X factor is going to be just that shoulder and just how does he bounce back. You know, what does the most unique offseason of his life do to him? Because he was honest with us. You know, he said that, you know, the longest he's gone without throwing a football has been 1 month in his life, you know, in his football life. Yeah. And here he is now approaching, assuming he still hasn't thrown now, I mean, it's 7 months. And, you know, that is foreign. That's an unknown. We just don't know. But let's say Luck is healthy. I do think, and the Schottenheimer point is a great point to make, because, you know, he has drilled in the, you know, single-digit interceptions, becoming more efficient. I do think Luck made some strides in that last year. He can still make more, but, you know, we saw his highest completion percentage of his career. I think I want to say the interception rate was the second best of his career. We saw just a more efficient Luck, definitely than 2015, but it still can take another step or two. So, yeah, and honestly, I think the injury has probably opened his eyes a little bit into, you know, he's had more time to have the mental side of the game, you know, fine-tune, you know, maybe isn't the right phrase to use, but, you know, he has had more of a look into that.
Right.
You know, he's had a second offseason with a guy like Brian Schottenheimer and Rob Chudzinski and guys that, you know, have experience working with, you know, elite quarterbacks before. So, yeah, I do think if Luck is healthy, the weapons are in place, the offensive line, you know, Matt, you and I agree that, you know, should be making, you know, steps in the right direction. You know, I see no reason why Luck doesn't get back to being definite Pro Bowler, and this offense in general, you know, being a top five to top ten offense. Because if the Colts are going to make the playoffs, that's what has to happen.
Absolutely.
You know, the offense has got to be a top five, top ten unit that finishes in the red zone. And the defense, you hope, you know, last year you were 30th. You hope it climbs, you know, probably to the, you know, early 20s, I guess, would be somewhat realistic, you know, if those guys can get on the same page. You know, if the Colts do that, you know, if they can win 10 or 11 games and win this division.
Yeah.
And then that, of course, I think sets you up potentially down the road, for a bigger season.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think the Colts have to be a top 10 defense. I think they just have to be in the middle third of the league in order to make significant strides as a complete team. Because I think that, like you said, this offense is really set to impress, I think. And, you know, defensively, make some strides. Every little bit's going to help. There's a few games where if the defense makes a stop, the Colts win 10 games as bad as they looked last year for a large part of the season. Mm-hmm. They still win 10 games last year with just a couple extra stops in the fourth quarter. So it's a very interesting offseason, very excited to see what this team offers in camp and to see kind of the approach that everybody involved takes from the front office to the coaching staff and the roster in general. Kevin, again, really appreciate you stopping in today to talk, man. Had a lot of fun getting some points of view from you, and I really appreciate your time. Is there anything that you're doing that you wanted to plug to the listeners?
Yeah, we're starting kind of a burning question series on Colts.com. That's starting up here now with training camp 2.5-ish weeks away, I guess. So, yeah, we're starting that back up kind of a day by day. We'll look at each position group, 3 or 4 questions regarding that position before training camp starts on July 29th. And then just kind of just a little season preview articles, you know, rookie playing time, you know, looking at guys heading into a contract year, injuries to watch once training camp gets here. Just kind of bringing everybody back up to speed because, you know, as we've talked about, Matt, over about the past hour or so, there's plenty of questions and headed into the 2017 season. And I think a lot of people are excited to see all of these play out because there's so much unknown with both sides of the ball, with the injury to Luck on offense and the offensive line trying to, you know, make strides, and then all the questions over on defense. So, yeah, a lot of interest, and I definitely enjoyed it and would love to do it again.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having on. Definitely we'll be having you on again. And I think you touched on one of the funnest parts about this offseason. Between yourself and me and anybody else in the Colts community who write or podcast or do anything, I think that we've asked about all of the possible questions that we could with this new Colts team heading into the offseason and throughout the offseason. The camp period and after are going to be a lot of fun trying to answer and see what's being answered about all of those questions we've been asking for so long. So I really
time for answers, right?
Absolutely. They're needed and they're going to be a lot of fun figuring out. So thanks again, Kevin, for joining me. You guys make sure that you guys are following Kevin on Twitter. Kevin, what's your Twitter handle for everybody?
Yeah, it's K Bowen Colts, B-O-W-E-N, and then also on Instagram at K Bowen Colts as well. So just some behind-the-scenes stuff was Colts traveling this year. And, yeah, I enjoyed it, Matt.
Absolutely. Kevin does great work on Colts.com. Make sure you guys are checking it out there. And, again, make sure you guys are getting that call in line at 516-574-2881. Also get yourselves on Apple Podcasts and get us a rating and review. Those are helping more than you can imagine. So keep that up, and I look forward to talking to you guys all again later on this week. So I will check you all out on Wednesday right here on Locked On Colts.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily podcast on the Indianapolis Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.